Okay, hello and welcome to another installment. And I did Dan's waving, everyone, just in case. Dan's waving. I did mispronounce this last time, I think, and I wrote it down to make sure I get it right. This is the Wagumpathabapa. I think I said the Wagumpahabapa last time. It's the Wagumpathabapa. Sorry.
How do you say world's greatest worst baseball team ever podcast?
Okay, well, that's going to be in the second half. Come on. Let everyone kind of ease into this, okay? Anyway,
diving right in.
Unlike other self-deprecating podcasts that claim to have, you know, a listenership in the single digits, it's actually true in our part. So let's go on. And you know what? I decided to throw a bit of a softball. We have to, you know, keep it 100. Who ate a sandwich? Who ate a sandwich today?
Keep it 10.
I ate a sandwich today.
I did eat a sandwich.
I ate a sandwich today.
Jesus Christ.
I ate two sandwiches today, actually.
I didn't eat a sandwich today, guys. No, I didn't.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, I mean, we're all on brand right now, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think so.
I ate two of them, and I made one for my five-year-old. So,
what did you have two different kinds of sandwiches? Oh, my goodness. I had two different kinds of sandwiches today.
I also did have two different kinds of sandwiches today, yes.
All right, quick sandwich rundown. Then we got to get down to brass tacks. Yeah. What do you have, Pete?
First was a ham and turkey club.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second one was a summer sausage.
Nice. Danica's ghost.
I had a Hawaiian roll slider with ham and cheese with the garlic butter on top.
Oh, that sounds tasty.
It was really good.
I had a mini Italian sub as well as a banh mi. And the banh mi was especially tasty. So anyway, those are some great sandwiches, huh? Let us.
Anybody want to know what I ate today?
I mean, was it encased in something? Not that really matters, but
no. I just grilled some chicken breasts with some Cajun seasoning on them.
And you didn't even think to like put them between like two. It's not that hard.
Uh-uh. Or you could wrap them in something, or just cuddle close to it. If you cuddled close to it for a moment or two, it might have been a sandwich.
No, didn't do that either.
Mm. Well, thanks everybody for joining us. This has been the Sandwich Podcast. So
Sandwichcast 2021.
Exactly.
I mean, that's all we're going to talk about all summer, at least now, right?
Oh, sandwiches. Man.
I mean, to be honest, the sandwiches I had today were much better than the sports experiences I partook in today. So that might be the case.
Yes. Yeah.
All right, so we're a little behind on our podcast schedule. We haven't done one of these for a while, and we wanted to get one of these in quick because we were hoping to have some, you know, brief shine of optimism, especially with the Wild going into the playoffs, because the second half of this won't be as much fun.
That will be a sad, sad, sad time.
It will be, likely. And I was joking earlier today, we are recording this on Thursday, May the whatevereth be with you. And
13th.
Thank you. And I joked before
the
we started
order.
That, you know, that while we were going to focus on a brief shine of optimism, the Wild were going to choke horribly and just limp into the playoffs, and it would leave a sour taste in all of our mouths.
Check mark on that.
Yeah. They were up 3-0 and then, you know, 7 unanswered after that. Great, great look going into the playoffs.
Feeling good.
Wow. I really didn't give us much runway to move forward with this, did I?
Woof.
Okay. Two steps back. The Minnesota Wild, a year in review. So this regular season has been a cheerful one in the past of the Wild. Is that a good tone, guys?
Like it.
Okay.
That's good. About right. Yeah.
Let's keep going. So, yeah, besides Kirill the Thrill, what have the Wild done this year that has made this kind of a fun season to watch? I mean, you know, he's so good. We know this. He's so good.
He's really good. No, I was thinking about this. Almost everything went right for the Wild.
Yep.
Like they lost Foligno for like 10 games in the middle of the year. That was the only major injury they had. Talbot was really good, although we'll probably talk about Talbot more when we get to the playoff preview. But all their defensemen played real solid defense. They really didn't score very much, but they actually had forwards scoring goals. Eric Sinek got 19 goals. Nico Sturm got 11. You know, like just across
center. Victor Rask had like 8.
Yeah, Victor Rask actually shot the puck into the net sometimes, you know, like there really wasn't. Zach Parise was really the only
healthy scratch. sorry, I had something in my throat.
And honestly, like, I guess, like, Johansson was a replacement player, Bjugstad was a replacement player, but like Nick Bonino was way better than he should have been.
Very good, yeah.
You want to talk about somebody who is a number, like, actually a valuable center, like, right. Nick Bonino out of nowhere did that. Ryan Hartman had a good year, like, just
Nico
everybody.
Sturm had a good year. Just waiting for the Nico Sturm corner.
He had enough of a good year that I learned that Eric Sinek's name wasn't Eric Sinek.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes. No, he looks really good. He actually took his game to a special level. Yeah.
If you want to talk about who had a good year, like, Eric Sinek has to be at the probably number two on the Wild for who had the best year.
Right. Yeah. I mean, all the defense. I mean, I think I said before, I don't know if it was on this podcast or not, but I said before the season to somebody, you know, the top four defenseman core of the Wild is one of the best defensive cores in the league, if not the best. Mm-hmm. And it still was. It, like, you know, and that's now at the point where Ryan Suter is the fourth of the four, which is, and he's still very good at that role. And Ian Cole and Carson Soucy were a great fifth and sixth defense. I mean, most teams don't go six defensemen deep with solid defensemen.
Right.
And the Wild go beyond that pretty much. Yep. So,
yeah. Carson Soucy had a ridiculous year. I mean, it's weird to say, like, oh, our sixth defenseman had a ridiculous year, but he scored more. Like, he had almost 20 assists in 56 games, and this is our third pair defenseman. So, I don't think he'll repeat it in the future. I don't think that Carson Soucy is this good, but he had a crazy good year, just kind of sneaky good. So,
it seemed like it all year. How well did the defense stack up offensively compared to the rest of the league? Because it seemed like the defense...
They didn't score.
Oh, really? Okay.
Really goals.
I suppose Dumba didn't score as much as
in previous years. Dumba didn't score at all. Spurgeon really struggled to score.
Mm.
But the nice thing was that they didn't have to because Foligno, Eriksson-Ek, Fiala, Kaprizov,
Kaprizov did what we found out he does. I mean, Zuccarello was really good playing with Kaprizov. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then Hartman and Stern, guys like Hartman and Stern contributed,
right?
You know, and that fourth line of like Bonino and somebody and Parise Bonino, Sturm, and Parise for a while was like the best line on the team too.
Mm-hmm. I don't know, like, you can't really look at this team this year and say this was a weak link. They really just played really well. So
yeah,
it was really fun. Like, I think that people will remember this year for a lot of reasons, a lot of them wearing number 97, but like, this was, everything clicked. And it's a little scary to think about what next year is going to look like, when probably not everything will work out quite as well, but we'll get there.
In a lot of ways, this was like the peak potential of a Minnesota Wild, of a classic Minnesota Wild team.
Right.
Because they weren't, I mean, they were really good at the things that the Wild have always been pretty good at, but they also could actually put pressure on teams offensively in a way that they rarely have been able to in the past.
Yeah.
And, you know, and they're just, and they're solid. Like Brooks said, they're solid throughout the lineup, which is a thing that, you know, on the one hand, the Wild have rarely ever had like really top end talent up front, you know, at the top of their depth chart, but they also have rarely had the bottom of their depth chart not being like, well, gosh, do we really have to watch James Shepherd skate out there every game again? Oh, poor James Shepherd.
I like Chris Stewart. Know,
yeah. Chris Stewart. Oh man. Jeez. Yeah. But yeah, it's like I don't know if Nibish will remember this, but I also said before the season, you know, I'll take ownership of this statement. I didn't say this on a podcast, but I said it to Nibish. I said, I'm not sure about this group of of forwards besides, you know, besides Fiala being Fiala and, you know, hoping that Kaprizov is really good right away. It doesn't seem like, it seems like a otherwise a collection of third liners like the Wild have always been.
Your commentary before the season definitely skewed to Kaprizov better be really good.
Yeah. And it turned out he was, but it also turned out that lots of other guys played, you know, as well as they ever have played or better than they ever played.
Yeah. And I think at the beginning of the season, it felt like this was a team that was kind of assembled to be sold for parts. We had a lot of 1-year contracts as forwards and stuff. And the thought was like, okay, if we get 20 games into the season and things aren't working out, we can trade Johansson, Bonino, you know, these guys for picks or whatever. And everybody contributed and there was no need to do that. So it was a really fun year, or it has been a really fun year. So hopefully it'll continue.
I think you said to us, it's their best like points percentage season ever, right?
Yep.
It's the Wild's best points by, I mean, obviously it's a shortened season, so it's not their best absolute number of points, but it's their best points percentage season ever in their existence.
Yeah. Actually, I looked that up because they actually have more wins than a significant number of 82 game seasons.
Yeah. That doesn't surprise me either.
Yeah. They're right about in the middle of their of Wild history. So there's like 11 seasons where they have more wins and six seasons where they have fewer. So in the middle third, and that's with an extra 26 games in most of those seasons. So it's pretty ridiculous what they did. So I think they should lobby to be in the Pacific Division next year.
That would be real nice, actually. Yeah. If we could move to the Pacific. I mean, Seattle can take, let's throw Seattle, release the Kraken into the Central, right? Release the Kraken onto the Avalanche.
Right.
Krakens historically do very well in landlocked spaces. I don't see any geographical reason this can't work.
Especially since the two teams that kicked the Wild's butts the most this year are teams from the Central, right?
Yes.
And the Wild dominated. They dominated the Pacific teams, and they actually dominated Vegas. I mean, I don't know if I shouldn't say dominated, but they won the season series with Vegas, but they got their butts kicked by St. Louis and lost more than they won against Colorado.
Yeah.
The two teams who are actually in their
division.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay. Most likely it's going to be figured out by the time this comes out, because our editing department is crap, frankly. But how are we lining up for the playoffs? It's between the Knights and the Avalanche, basically.
Yeah.
It's the Knights, right?
Yep.
Okay.
And they're going to Vegas.
So, yeah, it's been a fun regular season, and let's cherish it while we can. And moving forward to the playoffs, so between the Avs and the Knights, obviously, as you mentioned on the site, the Knights are strangely, though the one seed, the preferred matchup.
Yeah, I think that the Knights, what the Knights do well is what the Wild do well.
Yeah.
And so it's one of those, like, the Knights don't exploit a weakness on the Wild. Like, the Knights don't. The thing the Blues do really well that no one else in the division does well is they shoot. The shooting percentage of the Blues is way above
everybody else. As we found out tonight.
And the Wild don't really have an answer for that, because the Wild don't have elite goaltending.
Hmm.
Right. This is why the Knights beat the crap out of the Blues, because the Knights have elite goaltending and they just stop the Blues when they try to all these shots. So the Knights don't have that. The Knights are very average on shooting percentage. They're very average on shot quality. They don't like set up really great shots or anything. What the Knights do is they grind in the offensive zone, and then they rely on Fleury and Lehner to stop all the shots in the other. What the Wild do is they stop that grind. They're very good defensively in their own zone, right? If you can get them going up and down the ice like the Avalanche do every once in a while, it makes the Wild look not great. But the Knights just grind in the zone. And so the Wild are very good at defending against that. And then because the Knights don't take good quality shots and they don't shoot for a particularly high percentage, even if you have an average goaltender, you can shut down the Knights' offense to some degree. The Knights are very good. This is not to say that they're an easy team to beat. Like, all you have to do is shut down the Golden Knights' offense. But this Fleury is what the Wild
might stand on his head and shut you out.
Yeah, right. Right. And that's the thing is, like, even after you do that, then you still have to go down to the other end and score. And the Knights are very good at, one, holding possession of the puck, and two, stopping the puck once you're shooting at them. But the only team in the West that has a higher shooting percentage than the Blues is the Wild. So there is a, like, you know, if they have one of those games where they just shoot the lights out, it's pretty, you can see the way forward for them. And they can do that against the Knights because they're not constantly on their heels trying to defend against odd man rushes and stuff like that. And so I think that's why they've seen some success, because they just, the Knights don't challenge the Wild defensively in the same way that the Avalanche and the Blues do.
How many games is the series again? The first one? Is it seven? Oh, it is seven. Okay, okay. You know, as we mentioned, it sounds like the Wild might have more of an advantage against the Knights than other teams. And say we do get past the Knights, the Avs or the Blues, neither of those look good.
What? Yeah. What's your prediction for the Avs-Blues matchup, Brooks?
Oh, yeah, that is a good question, yeah.
I saw already that the Avs-Blues matchup, analytically, is the most lopsided matchup in the playoffs. Like, just from possession numbers.
In favor of the Avalanche.
Right? In favor of the Avalanche, yeah. Yes. Yeah. So anybody who's looking at it from statistics, analytics, that kind of thing, is looking at, is predicting the Avalanche pretty handily.
Yeah. I mean, my guess, I said this on the site a couple of weeks ago. My guess is the Avalanche are going to be favored analytically against anyone they match up with in the playoffs.
Yes.
The Avalanche are the best team.
But I think the Knights are, like, the Knights Wild is, the Knights are going to be favored.
Right.
Like, no one's looking at that series and saying, oh yeah, the Wild got them.
Right.
There's a way for the Wild to win. I don't think anyone will be, you know, shocked if that happens, but nobody is favoring the Wild in that series.
I should say that's likely what we're suggesting here. Like, well, you know, there's a chance.
Right.
The Knights are definitely the best matchup of the three teams.
Out of the three,
They just are much better against that style than the other two styles.
I want to go back to my proposal last time I was on this podcast. I think they should let terrible teams into the playoffs so that the Wild can play them.
Exactly.
That would be much better than having to play good teams.
If only we could play the Montreal Canadiens, like somebody's going to get to.
The Avalanche should beat the Blues. The Blues have the potential for having good goaltending and, you know, whatever. You know, they shoot the lights out. Grubauer has an off game or two. Like, there's a way, but that's just because hockey is pretty tough to predict. So I would imagine the Avs are going to be waiting for the Vegas-Minnesota winner in round two.
Just because we love to shine optimism everywhere. I guess the question is, how many games do you predict the Avs would win in should they make it past the Knights?
I think it's a five-game series at most.
Hey, history says
every time
the Wild and Avalanche meet in the playoffs, the lower seed wins.
Yeah.
It's 3-for-3 so far. So Wild and seven.
Andrew Brunette is not walking through that door.
What about Nino Niederreiter? Oh, damn.
too soon. Nino will get his shot at that. That's my prediction right now. Nino will get his shot at the Avs in the Stanley Cup Finals.
The Hurricanes look really good, too. Yeah. No, I think it'd be great. I'd love to see the Wild win in seven in overtime in Colorado for a third time. I'm going to call that.
Let's just do it and be legends.
Yep.
All right. So going forward, as you mentioned, one of the Wild's weaker points are their goaltending. How do you see that going forward, and how are they going to work with that in the playoffs?
Cam Talbot's been bad for 3 weeks right now, and it's getting scary. So I think this is the thing people are worried about. Like, he's given up a lot of goals, and if he doesn't play well, you can't win a playoff series as the Wild are constructed with a goalie who is giving up 4 goals a game. So they need him to stop some shots. And Kakkonen doesn't look a whole lot necessarily better. Although Kakkonen has had a lot of success against Vegas, where Talbot didn't. So I'm shrugging my shoulders. I'm throwing my hands up in the air. I don't think Evanson particularly likes Kakkonen, though. He really doesn't seem to give him a lot of chances. And so my guess is he's going to ride Talbot until he absolutely cannot. So I think we're going to see a lot of Cam Talbot, and I hope that we get good to Cam Talbot.
That's about right. It's about right. I mean, you know, again, reaching back to the beginning of the season, you know, I was pretty mad about Cam Talbot, like I was mad about the entire forward group besides Fiala and Kaprizov, and Cam Talbot for a while was performing above my expectations easily.
Yeah,
and no. Then he kind of came back down to earth at the end of the season here.
The middle of the season there, Cam Talbot was like top five, top six goalie in the NHL. Like he was absolutely locked in, and Evason just played him every single game. And I don't know if he got tired or what, but man, he just really is not seeing the puck as well right now. Those goals last, not tonight, but the second to last game, the goals that Talbot was letting in on Wednesday were bad goals. Those were, and we really haven't seen him give up a lot of bad goals this year. So that I don't like to see.
Hate to see it.
Right.
Hate to see it. But like we said, we'll be optimistic here again. Well, I'll say Wild in six against Vegas, because why not?
Wild in six. I like it. I can see Wild in six.
Need some level of optimism here, because the rest, it's all downhill from here.
It's about to get worse. Hey, the Minnesota Lynx season starts tomorrow.
That's right.
We'll hit up our Lynx coverage next podcast. But yes, that will be one of the slim rays of hope. I don't know if I'll say Wild in six, but if they do win, I will say it will take at least six.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think the Wild are sweeping anybody. Like they're not that good of a playoff team. No.
Okay. So before we look too forward into the dark future, why don't we enjoy a little bit more of this year and enjoy a little bit of Kirill the Thrill Kaprizov. Just what a year, but you know, quickly, how can we quickly sum up what kind of year it was?
Yeah, it's crazy. So he scored goals like rookies don't score goals, and there was a point there where, and remember early in the year, he didn't really shoot the puck. Like he scored that overtime winner and then didn't really score for another like five or six games, and still finished the year scoring a goal every other game almost, which is just unheard of for an NHL rookie. Like Ovechkin is really the only rookie to play a full season and do that since the last lockout. And so like anytime you're in a category that's only Alexander Ovechkin, when you're talking about scoring goals like that, it's hard to overstate how special that is.
It's good company. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Like that's elite goal scoring company. Yeah.
And I don't know if that means we're getting 50 goal seasons in our future or anything. Like Ovechkin was 18 when he was doing it, whereas Kaprizov is a little bit more advanced. But yeah, and then for a while this last couple of weeks he decided he wasn't gonna score any more goals. He's just gonna set everybody else up for goals. And then he just got like five assists in three games and looked really great doing that too. So it's hard to find things that he can't do. He is aggressive on the forecheck. He takes the puck away. Like watching him just strip people of the puck and come out with the puck and set up somebody else is just, that makes me happy.
And when he chooses to protecting the puck as well.
Right. And that's insane. And yeah. And like, I don't know. That makes me happy too. There's a lot of things about Kirill Kaprizov that make me happy. So yeah, like it's just, it's really fun. Like it was a goof in the first Wang Doodle to put the Kirill Kaprizov corner in there. And then every single week, there were like three or four gifts that you could find to put in there. And it was just like, okay, well, this is the easiest part of writing this thing, is to just find some fun stuff that somebody's saying about him. So it's been the absolute number one reason that everyone who's a Wild fan will always remember this season. Like this was a incredibly special season, and it was him who did it.
And if anything, he made it more difficult because you had to choose between the gifts to put up.
Right. I had to limit myself.
All right, so we will end this half on a small glimmer of optimism, and we will come back to you after this break with Abject Despair. Okay, and welcome back. And before we plunge into the dark seas forward, let's take a quick look at the half-bubba-baked fantasy league.
Hey there, friends. I think you know it's fantasy time.
time again. It's time to follow all those stats and figure out who got the most at-bats. Hey, remember all those players, ones that hit well and had lots of layers in their hair? The ones with the pretty hair, yeah, you know who I'm talking about. Noah Syndergaard, he has really nice hair, and he pitches fast, and he looks like a bear. A little bit, if you think about it. Don't think about it too much, though.
Yeah. And that was thanks to my good friend Jared. And as an update, in third place right now, the German, tied for second place is the great Lurker Ben. And Mr. RZK, who was supposed to start the other league but didn't, and somehow is in second place in this one. If you're listening, you're on notice, man. Number one is the Texas Twin fan. Must be benefiting from his special brand of angry optimism.
Former SoCal.
Yes. And one more mention. What's this in last place?
Nibish?
It's Nibish's quality team.
I didn't even bother naming the last team. Place.
I thought you actually named it that. That would have been even more beautiful.
It's a quality team.
However, it still lands. It still lands. I like it. Okay. I'm only bringing this up to try to put off what we have to talk about next.
Do we have to?
We don't. It's been a great podcast, everyone. We'll see you next time. Hey. Bye-bye.
Leak season tomorrow, guys.
Okay. All right. No.
Okay.
Okay. There's a lot of things to talk about. Where do we start? I have a number of things written down here to discuss, but number one, first of all, I think we should discuss why.
I mean, literally, I'm pretty sure that I was talking with DK about this earlier today. Like, FanGraphs probably simulated this season like 10 trillion times, and I think they saw a season this bad coming like twice.
This is kind of one of those like Avengers Endgame guy holding up the one finger things, right?
Yeah. Like, there is one reality in which the Twins are going to lose 120 games, and it just so happens
it's this one. Yeah,
this is like, yeah, I mean, this is more like Ozymandias saying I did it 30 minutes ago.
Yeah, I literally every single thing that could possibly go wrong has not just gone wrong. It has gone wrong to like such a degree. We knew the bullpen was going to be potentially shaky. It's been like mid-90s bad.
An epic disaster. I mean, it's been completely
six-pen bad. It's been six-pen bad.
Unusable. Yeah, six-pen bad. Yes. Yeah.
It's been almost worse than six pen. Literally every single, I mean, you don't like clutch hits? Well, fantastic. I don't think, as I was saying earlier today, I don't think they have won a game in which they trailed at any time by more than one run. It's mind-boggling. A, how unlucky, but just unlucky on top of actual terrible.
Yeah.
This is a terrible team that is getting unlucky in its terribleness.
Yeah.
And it started out so good. I mean, like, they were 5-2, and one of the two was a wonky Manfred ball nonsense. So you're like, geez, this is a good team here.
Right. It's really hard to remember now, but they dominated that Mariners series. I mean, not Mariners series. The Brewers series, the first series of the season, they dominated other than one inning and Manfred ball.
Yeah, I think they've won a half a game since then.
They've won since the Brewers, or since they were 5-2.
I mean, clearly they've won.
They are 7-21 since they were 5-2. They have won 25% of their games since the first literal week of the season.
They have won at a 40 win pace since starting the season 5-2.
Yes, that's correct. Yes.
I was joking before, but let's really end the podcast right now, guys.
Jesus. I mean, like I said, where do you start? Like, Go down the roster. Go down the entire roster and tell me who hasn't been bad in some
Buxton, way. Except Buxton has been bad because he has only been on the field like half the time. And that's not his fault, obviously. But without him, they're even more of a disaster than they were.
I mean, they are unequipped to not, I mean, you know, as much as we hope so, and as much as every year they tell us they are, you know, I mean, and we all, I think most of us were hoping that we were, but we're just not, you know, they are unequipped to not have Buxton on this team. They are not able to manage without him.
At the same time, though, I mean, going into the season, we were a little rosy, so you would have thought that they could have kind of limped along for a while.
I mean,
we didn't see Duffy going from a top 10 reliever in baseball to a gas can.
I didn't see Jake Cave being literally unable to ever hit a ball ever.
Yes, just can't put the ball in play.
I thought Jake Cave could be a fill in.
And also, and that's the other part. We didn't also see Jake Cave starting literally every single one of the first like 25 games.
Right. But I mean, I expected at least like a 700 OPS from Jake Cave.
Oh, I mean, even if he was doing 600, it would be
right. Acceptable. Even if he was doing 600, it would be way. Even if he was just hitting like Billy Hamilton, he would be doing better than he is now.
Well, Billy Hamilton, luckily for Billy Hamilton, is hitting much better than he was 3 games ago.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I noticed that today. I was like, oh, his average is a lot higher all of a sudden.
Well, I mean, yeah, you're talking about literally one of the easiest people in baseball to get out and not get him out.
You can go down every member of the bullpen, and they have been worse than you. I mean, even if you thought, well, some of them won't be. I mean, is it possible that Duffy wouldn't be as good as he was the last 2 years? Sure, but he's been worse than that. Is it possible that Alex Colome isn't really a sub-1 ERA pitcher? Obviously, it's possible. In fact, it's extremely likely. But does it mean he's an 8 ERA reliever? No, it shouldn't. But he has been that.
Even Rogers. Rogers is unequivocally the best player in the bullpen right now. And he hasn't even been all that good. I mean, he's been okay, but it's not like he's been been shut down or anything. Hansel Robles is the second best player in the bullpen.
There are days when Hansel Robles is incapable of throwing strikes.
Yeah. And I mean, he only gave up one of the inherited runners today. And that's true. Was actually a vast improvement over what they've been doing. Literally, by the statistics, it's been a vast improvement over what they did. They were letting in 70% of all inherited runners as of a few games ago. I don't know what it is now. I can't imagine it's gotten better.
But I mean, like, Stashek has been, you know, completely terrible. Theobar has actually been worse against lefties than against righties, and he's supposed to be
a lot worse. He's giving up like a 400 batting average to lefties. You can't be a lefty guy.
Jorge Alcala is the guy everyone wanted to pitch in the 10th inning of the Brandon Waddell game, and then he gave up a 2-run homer to Jose Abreu yesterday.
Kenta Maeda turned from like a second place Cy Young winner to possibly the worst starter in baseball, except for
Matt Shoemaker.
Oh my god! It's just
Matt Shoemaker is really good against the Tigers, guys.
Against Detroit.
As long as we always have him face the Tigers, so we have to do two things, right? We have to have Shoemaker always face the Tigers, and J-Hap has to never face the White Sox.
Okay. Ever again. Literally the worst start of his career.
You cannot have left-handed pitchers face the White Sox. If you have four other right-handed starters, you cannot have your left-handed starter. And yet J-Hap is scheduled, I believe, to face the White Sox again next week, and I'm sure they will just do that because we got to stay on schedule.
Wait, does Astudillo throw ready?
He does.
Yes. They should actually have Astudillo open that game. Yes.
I honestly think they should, at this point, they need to get into heavily into the opener. I mean, just throw stuff at the wall, but the opener needs to be looked at, especially with Hap and especially with Shoemaker, if they're going to keep having him throw the ball.
But your preferred bulk guy to follow the opener now has elbow inflammation.
I would have preferred Smeltzer, truthfully. Out of the four theoretical options they had, I would have preferred Smeltzer because he's done okay as a following an opener kind of situation. But yeah, he's hurt. The two wonder prospects they have are hurt. It's a dumpster fire.
Randy Dobnik has been bad everywhere he's been this year.
He's been moved around a lot, to be fair.
Sure, yeah. But I mean, you know, how much? Yeah. What is that?
Yeah.
What is that?
I know. Go out
and get outs, and he hasn't done that.
I'm clinging on to what I can here, guys.
I just thought of positive pitching news. Did you guys see that Rich Hill threw a 69-mile-an-hour curveball and Dick Mountain was trending on Twitter?
Yes. Yes, I did see that. That was Dick Mountain pitched really good tonight, actually. Yep. Yeah.
So there's something positive.
Yeah, he's on a nice little run. I said to Nivish earlier tonight, I really miss Dick Mountain. I mean, he's left-handed, too. I wouldn't want him to start against the White Sox either, but I wish he was on this team otherwise.
You know, we thought we had, I mean, like, Smeltzer and Thorpe are like the 8th and 9th and 10th starters in the thing. And you're like, oh man, that's actually way better than most.
8th and 9th and 10th?
I don't know.
You mean like 6th and 7th?
Oh, well, I mean, they're going to be 3rd and 4th before too long.
Right. Because I was going to say, though, if you go down the roster, there's actually one guy I would say, I think, who has really not been vastly disappointing, either because they've been absent or because they've been bad. I mean, Buxton has been great, but he's been absent, unfortunately. Yep. That's not his fault, but it has happened. And so it's a disappointment in a non-culpability sense. There's one guy who I think who hasn't been a disappointment in some way, and that's Michael Pineda.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I put him on my fantasy team.
He gives up home runs, yes, because he pounds the strike zone with his pitches. He will give up home runs. But he always goes out and gives you a chunk of innings and limits the damage to those couple home runs.
Couple of runs, 6 innings every time.
I would say.
Well, not today. Not today, because totally he would have given me the quality starter if he had done that today.
He didn't get, they took him out before 6.
5.1, 5.2, I forget. But
he walked the first two.
Yeah. I was hoping
you can't do much.
Yep. I agree. It was the right decision, but I was like, come on, man. Come on.
I don't know. Bequeathing runners to the Twins bullpen is just not the right decision.
No, it is not.
Except if he took him out to start that inning, then Hansel Robles would have walked the first two batters anyway.
It's true. It's very true.
I knew that. Okay, so here's a really fun exercise. When did you know the season was completely lost?
When did I know?
Yeah.
I mean, when did I know?
When did it become apparent to you that there was no coming back? This isn't the 2019 Nationals. This isn't.
Look, I felt good after the Royals series, to be honest. I felt like, and then Luis Robert got hurt like either that weekend or right after it. And I thought, well, we had our whole lineup intact at that point going into the Ranger series. And we had bashed the Royals in 2 out of 3 games. I thought we had a chance to start making a move. And then we won the first game against the Rangers, although Rodgers gave up a bomb to Gallo. In the first game, I mean, Rodgers gave up a couple bombs in that series, so I don't remember exactly who it was, but he gave up a bomb, but they still won the first game. And then Kirilloff and Buxton get hurt, and they lose the next 3 games, and then they lose 1 game to the Tigers, and then suddenly they've had a 2-4 week against the Rangers and the Tigers. So, I mean, somewhere in there is when, I think probably when Buxton came up hobbled running down to first is when I knew it was over. It was probably the exact moment when I knew it was over. What's your answer, Nivish?
I feel like it was when they came into that after they had semi-demoted Colomé, and he came in for that down game where they were down 1.
that was a strange move. That's just, I've said this before. You know, I've said this to Nivish before. They treat. I don't know whose decision it is. I mean, I have my opinions on who actually is the decision makers, but whoever the collective brain trust treats tie games and close deficits very differently than they treat close leads and even semi-large leads. And so apparently a 1-run deficit is low leverage, where a 1-run lead or a 2-run lead or a 3-run lead is high leverage. But You know, if that's, they thought that was the spot to use Colome in, and it, and that, that for that spot, it still wasn't, he wasn't ready to do it yet.
I have had happier thoughts since then, like you say, after the Royals thing. But after that, a large part of my, like, this is a team that could do it, it just, oh my God, no, well, this is not a team that's going
to
do it.
That actually kind of leads me to something I thought we should bring up, is I know everybody's saying it, so the players are obviously having their issues. How much goes above them? The coaching and, you know, the upper management. How much of the problems are they a part of, if any? I would admit, I would have to say it's to some degree.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it goes all the way to the top. You know, the higher you get, the more blame you have. And that, so I think more responsibility for the good stuff. I mean, and this is my opinion in baseball in general. I think more responsibility for the good stuff goes to front office management than field manager management. And I think the same is true when stuff is not going, it's going. I think the front office has failed a lot. I mean, a lot of this stuff was not foreseeable. Like, again, Alex Colome being this bad, it was not foreseeable. But they did still reduce the depth that the bullpen had. They did decide that replacing the pitchers they had before with J-Happ and Matt Shoemaker was and then the Randy Dobnik potpourri was fine. And, you know, they don't really have any answers to the issues of if their most important players, they thought they did have answers to it. And I was wrong too. I thought they had better answers than they did, but they didn't have answers to
most important players
missing any time.
We thought they had better answers than they did, but we did some of these. I mean, in an earlier podcast, we did identify the bullpen
dangerous. But overall, in a minor defense of the front office, like, we were like, well, yeah, this kind of looks good.
Just about every projection system had him going 90, winning 91 games.
Right.
Almost every single one of them. I mean, so, a few of them had 88, that's, but we're not question. Even going to come close to 88. I mean,
is it the players?
We're not going to come within 15 to 88.
Is it the players or is it above them? Or is it just a mix of the two? And I mean, obviously you can't quantify it in any way, but.
Yeah. I mean, all I can quantify is what the players are doing in the
spots. Well, yeah, play, yeah, yeah, right? Yeah, yeah.
And,
but just why is the question?
Yeah. I don't know. Why? I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, that's what we started with. Why?
Yeah. Like, I mean, everyone is to blame. Everyone is to blame.
I don't have any problem throwing a lot of the blame around. I feel like it goes pretty much everywhere. Yeah, I don't know. I have no idea. Again, this is like a second or third percentile result that we're going to get out of this team here.
Right. I mean, the standard line people use, I mean, is when a team underachieves or to talk about what Nibbish hates to talk about. If a team underperforms its run differential, for instance, or when a team overperforms its run differential, they credit that apparently to the manager, right? They say, well, the manager got them to won them more games than they should have, or. And when a team underperforms their run differential, although our run differential is starting to get closer to our actual record now.
I don't think we're going to have any problem with the run differential.
That's also the manager's fault. And my answer is sure. You know, the reality is when things go this bad, then people lose their jobs.
So, exactly. I mean, do I love every single move that Rocco makes of the bullpen? Obviously not. But, I mean, we saw it today. People want him to leave guys in longer. He leaves Pineda in longer. Pineda's been good. Yeah, I think, I don't remember who said it on Twitter, but it was like, when the building is wired to implode, every single button you press is going to detonate.
Well, that was fun.
Enjoy Michael Pineda while you got him. He'll be
wearing another uniform. Okay. So are you guys seeing the fire sale?
Oh yeah.
I mean, anything that can be moved, you know. I think
you guys are just. I'm not saying this with any sort of judgment. Just, you're waving the white flag right now. Just abandon ship.
Oh yeah.
I think they're losing. I think after the fire sale, they'll lose 100 games. But, I mean, they've been playing at a 40-win pace for a non-insignificant amount of time.
For what, 85% of the season or something so far?
Because I got to say, because this looks like we're going into like a six-month dormancy of the podcast.
Yeah.
I feel like we just
came after, out of that. Well, I mean,
this might be the season finale.
DG, I don't.
Four rounds.
Are the Wild going to be around in the month? In a month, are the Wild?
I mean, are they still going to be in Minnesota? Come on, this isn't the Timberwolves. A-Rod didn't just buy them.
Yep.
I don't know. I mean, you know, do you want me to be positive? maybe they win some more games when Bucks and Kirilov come back. If Kirilov comes back.
Positivity. I don't think they'll get rid of Buxton or Berrios just because I think it'll be too hard. So there's positivity. They'll probably both be Twins next year.
All right, let's not get down too dark a path, and we don't have so much time left. Briefly, we're starting to see some names come up. Do you have any glimpses of hope beyond this season? Like, for example.
Alex Kirilov looks like the real deal.
Right.
If he can get his wrist gets fixed one way or another, I mean, he's going to be good. He crushes the ball. He smokes the ball every time he makes contact with it. And he makes contact plenty, but he crushes the ball.
And if Polanco is actually starting to get a little bit right and become an actual like functioning second baseman, that's positive. It's a positive attached to an if, but
that's a piece to be moved, though.
Yeah, that's close.
You're not going to be able to move Polanco, are you?
Well, I'm saying let him run on a hot streak, and you know, maybe some silly GM will pull that trigger.
We could really use Kepler getting on a hot streak because he would be movable if he was hitting better.
Maybe Garlic hits like 10 home runs off of lefties, and they're like,
"Hey, I heard you need a lefty bench bat, yeah." Or let's let a lefty masher off the bench. Yeah.
All right. We're running out of time, and let's do our
fire sale preview next time.
Yeah, I was about to say, let's save some of this optimism so we have something to do.
No, let's just before talk, let's like just talk next about,
February. Yeah.
I mean, I think it's only been a few games for Larnach too, but I like his approach at the plate also. And remember, Kirilov was crushing the ball, but he wasn't getting hits for a while. Larnach has done a little better than that so far, but he looks like a real hitter too.
Yeah, plus that at bat he had today was really good.
Very nice. Yes. Then Mitch Garver took a fastball right down the lower half of the zone for strike three. But Larnach had a really nice at bat.
I said on a positive note.
Larnach had a really nice at bat. I mean, I'm excited about Kirilov and Larnach for sure because they're Twins controllable for the foreseeable future, and they both look like real major league hitters to me. I mean, it's been a short amount of time, and they'll have ups and downs, but they look like. So I mean, I hope one of them can play the corner outfield some, unless we have to make Larnach the future DH. But yeah, they look like real hitters, which is the first step.
All right. Well, let's hope that Kirilov the Thrill comes back to us soon. Very quickly, let's move on to some videos you might have missed, which is generally all of them. Anybody who wants to go first?
I really love the Icelandic Eurovision song.
Ah, yeah, yeah.
I think it was Dari Ogajamanjet.
I'm taking your word for it.
That was fun.
It was really fun.
It was goofy, and but like if you got past the goofiness, it actually kind of had a good groove to it. I liked it.
Dance.
I'm going to choose Alton Gun, which I played. They are an Amsterdam-based Turkish band, and I looked up the pronunciation because I thought it can't be as simple as Alton Gun, but it is actually Alton Gun. I wasn't even going to attempt any sort of pronunciation of that Icelandic band, nor will I attempt any pronunciation of the name of this song. But it is a really... You guys have heard that name around or seen it around, right? Elton Gunn?
So, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that sounds familiar, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And that was the same for me for a while. And then just recently I decided to try to... Well, I was looking for something to play. And I found that and I was like, oh, this is actually really interesting. Again, they're Amsterdam-based, but playing like a Turkish Anatolian rock psychedelic combination. I don't know. It was fun and groovy, and I dug it.
Aman şaşırttın beni, aşka düşürdün beni, aşk adamı ağlatır, derd adamı söyletir. Aman şaşırttın beni, aşka düşürdün.
Gonna highlight if that's okay. I'm gonna highlight my video from last week by Julian Baker, obviously.
Whoa! What?
No, just kidding. Lucy Dacus has a new album coming out next month.
Actually, I dug that Phoebe Bridgers one. I played just to complete the Boy Genius trifecta.
Honestly, sometimes I was thinking one of these times when it's just when it's maybe I don't know if DG is gonna want to get into this whole thing, but the three of us ought to do a full like segment of a podcast where we analyze the whole careers of the three Boy Genius ladies in depth, because boy, that would be fun to just talk for 40 minutes about. But anyway, yeah, hopefully this year is the year of both Julian Baker and Lucy Dacus's careers getting that Phoebe Bridgers trajectory. Lucy Dacus has her first single is called Hot and Heavy. I played that video last week. The new album comes out in June. Check it out.
You used to be so sweet. Now you're a firecracker on a crowded street. Couldn't look away even if I wanted. Try to walk away, but I come back to the start.
Again, if we do an actually in-depth thing, I might talk about why I think it might be harder for Lucy Dacus to have a Phoebe Bridgers-like trajectory, but I really hope it happens because she's just as good. And in some ways, she has a style that I think probably our audience is maybe a little more attuned to. So, like, everybody here, especially, like, check it out. I think it's going to be a really good record.
I mentioned this somewhere. I can't remember exactly where I saw it, but I saw, like, a young boy, like, 2 years old, who is wearing a Boy Genius shirt. I thought, holy crap, that kid is so cool. But then I realized it said Boy Genius.
Oh.
I was like, ah, you're not nearly as hip as I thought you were. DG, do you have anything that you dug?
Well, I can, DG I guess. Dug.
Yeah, cool.
There it is. I can kind of tie into this and also disqualify myself from this future podcast that you guys are planning, because I was just telling Nivish the other day, I'm a year late on this, but now I've been kind of obsessed with the Phoebe Bridgers album from last year. So to the point that my son is now humming "I Know the End," like the trumpet part at the end, in the bathtub every night. I, like, you walk by the bathroom, you hear him just humming that bit in there. So that's then awesome. I open the door and scream at him to match the scream of the song. No, I don't do that. There was a Phoebe Bridgers song, so that's been on there for sure. Also, Eshap's Hives video was really cool. I forgot how much. So that was a really good one too.
The Hives are fun. I remember seeing them a ways back, and they put on a fun show.
Yep.
Got a video, Nibish?
I let it off.
Yeah.
Oh, you did.
All right. Dade og gayamanyed. I wrote the pronunciation down.
Wait, on a piece of paper. Does Hungry Joe have a video? Like, did I miss one? Did I just zone out of somebody talking about a video?
Yeah, you zone.
Yeah, so, wow. Dude, come on.
My bad. I'm still thinking
about what they're going to get for Pineda.
I'm in despair mode still. I totally blacked out, just like Julie Baker does.
It's okay. It's okay.
Except, unfortunately, not as much alcohol.
Blacked out on a weekday?
Yeah. Oh, man. You got to catch up, Brooks, and then you can join our podcast someday.
You're so cool.
Actually, DG, did you have a video this week?
Me?
Oh, God. Oh, man, this is really ending poorly.
Video. Awesome.
I know. That was the joke.
Oh, that's the joke. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, boy. All right, okay. We're ending this podcast season is going.
But I didn't get to have a video.
Oh, wait, didn't you? Oh, my goodness. I forgot. I didn't think you didn't say a video. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah! Cha-ching!